is Happiness Solved with America's happiness coach, Sandy Scarlatta.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. So today I am going to be speaking with the one and only disruptive entrepreneur, Rob Moore, and he is going to share some invaluable insight into how he has become a hugely successful entrepreneur, and we just have a really great conversation. I hope you enjoy it.
Right, if you'd like to get up in my messed up head, if you'd like to know what really goes on in here, apparently everyone does who follows me, you need to watch this episode. So I'm with Sandy Scarlatta, and she is the host of the Happiness Solved podcast. And I am her humble servant. It's your show, Sandy. Take it away. I'm here to answer anything you'd like. If you want to get in there, let's do it.
All right. Sounds great. And you did a good job with my name. And by the way, my maiden name is Sandy Moore.
Ah.
Yeah. Maybe we're distant relatives. Probably not. Yeah. But yeah, I was Sandy Moore for the first 24 years of my life. So wow. Yes, I do want to get into your head, Rob, because as a disruptive entrepreneur, how do you stay focused when you jumped on, you're like, I just did this and I was on Clubhouse and a podcast. Like, how do you stay focused when all this is going on around you?
Yeah, well, look, I kind of thrive on having a lot on. And it's funny because in life, I think, you know, like superheroes and the X-Men, they all have their own version of kryptonite. They all have the one thing that's their superpower and it's also their weakness. And one of mine is having too much on. There's a part of having too much on I absolutely love and I thrive. And, you know, having that little bit too much to do just means you're always getting more done and getting more done. But then on the other side of it, too much overwhelm, it is a bit like my kryptonite, and it can just really create a bit of internal frustration, I suppose. I wouldn't call it anxiety or stress. It's a level below that, but it's frustration. I remember learning from Bill Gates, who said, you know, hire smart people, give them a bit too much to do and get out of their way. So, you know, I think you're often more productive when you've got a little bit too much to do and not a little bit not enough to do. There's some downsides to it. I mean, I get a lot done, but I'm always 5 minutes late for everything, or I was 10 minutes late for you, Sandy. So I apologize to that live in front of everyone.
Because no,
I always think, oh, I've got half an hour. I know what I'll do. I'll do a quick live. Oh, no, I'll do a podcast and I'll do a Clubhouse at the same time. I'll get it done by 8, no problem. And then, of course, I'm a bit late. So they say you should be 5 minutes early for everything. Honestly, I'm usually 5 minutes late for everything. And I've just kind of accepted that that's who I am. And it doesn't make me a bad person. But I stay focused by making sure that the task I've got to do right now, I'm going to do right now. Like, I'm looking at you on the screen, or I'm looking at you here, and this is what I'm doing now. There is nothing that is distracting me. You know, I know I've got my phone over there. I've got notes over there. There's a million things I could be doing. But focus is about follow one course until successful. And it's about drowning out the thing that you've got to do next, or the thing that you didn't do very well last time, future and past, and staying in the present moment. Because if you think about it, and I'm talking to myself here as well as everyone else, Sandy, if you think about it, there is no overwhelm because you can only do one thing at a time right now. So what overwhelm is an anticipation that there's too much to do in the future. So to stay focused is to think about the task at hand right now. And I'm actually pretty good at that when I'm in that, but I don't like distractions. So I'm in my home office here, and the guy was cutting trees down over there, and that was making a noise. And, you know, sometimes I'm on Clubhouse and the phone's over there, and it's just, I could just hear it a bit. And that pulls your attention away. So actually, you've got to have a conducive environment, you know, like a good workspace and no internet connection issues, or 68 children trying to, you know, come in your office. You know, I only have two, but I'm exaggerating. So yeah, staying focused is knowing the most important task you've got to do right now, having a good timely deadline to get it done, and smashing it out and getting it done, and making sure your energy is good. And it's a high value task and not a low value admin task.
No, I like that. So I talk a lot about pressing the reset button, right? Like, you know, when you're feeling a little bit too stressed, and we all get there, especially when you're doing a million different things, like you're just talking about. So I compare it to like a computer as an example. If your computer's not working, what do? You reboot it, right? Well, we can do that in our own lives as well. We can press the reset button. What do to press the reset button if you have to start your day over?
So I am really bad at this. So just straight up honesty, I'm really bad at this. And I mean, I retired mid last year, handed all the operations of the company over to my MD. Clubhouse came along and it was brilliant because it filled my void of space and time with something that could basically just cure me from my own boredom. I'm the worst bored person in the world. I just mess everything and everyone up when I'm bored. And all of a sudden now I'm bloody doing 6 a.m. till 9 p.m. I mean, look, we're going to probably go till 9 p.m. tonight, UK time. And I'm bashing out days like that for fun every weekend as well. And so I'm the worst ever at recharging and resetting. But obviously, I haven't burned myself out. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. I'd be going somewhere. So what works for me is going to the gym. What works for me is having a routine which factors in my ebbs and flows. What works for me is doing things I'm inspired by. Like I'm not the sort of guy that works for a month and then has a week off. I'm the sort of guy that works for 5 weeks, but I'll do little mini breaks in the day. So, you know, I'll go walk into town and have lunch in town. And that's like an hour and 15 minutes in the day. And it just feels like a little mini holiday within a day. So I'm the guy that has a holiday every day, but for an hour or half an hour. I think people call them micro retirements. Don't ever retire, have a micro retirement. So if you think about it, it's probably better to retire 1 to 2 months per year, every year, than work your whole life and then try and retire at the end and then have no purpose and then probably die, which most people do. So,
oh, yeah. You have to have a purpose in life.
Yeah. I mean,
what is there to get out of bed for?
Well, exactly. And I think that's probably why I don't need the reset button maybe as many as others. Although, you know, every 2 or 3 years, I probably do need a good big break. Or if I don't, I, you know, normally get myself a bit overwhelmed. Love going to the gym, love going on long walks, love having conversations with really interesting people, love going on shopping trips and buying things. And they're probably the 4 things I do to reset. But you probably get a better answer out of someone more qualified than me for that.
Hey, just curious.
Yeah.
So a lot of hugely successful people, they always have like a ritual that they do every single day when they get up. Do you have something like that?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a book called Routine Equals Results because everyone was always asking me for my routine, but I'm thinking, well, I've tested my routine over a good 6 months, but that's my routine and it's not relevant to you. So actually, and in the end, I just wrote a book to basically let people everyone who asked me the question, I could just say, hey, look, go grab the book. But I think routine does equal results. And there's a paradox of being an entrepreneur, and it is, you spend many years of your life craving freedom and not liking your boss and not liking your hours and not liking your work and not liking the deadlines and not liking A, B, C, D, and E of working for someone else. And then you have this naive, delusional fantasy that when you work for yourself, you've got ultimate freedom. You can get up when you want. You can do what you want. And then it's like being a speck of dust in the universe, just floating around. Okay, I've got all this time now and I have no idea what to do. I have no idea what task to do first. I don't know what a deadline is. I don't know where to start. And it can be very disorientating. And then you can just end up hustling away, but on all the wrong stuff. So just remind me of the question again, Sandy. I've gone off on such a tangent. I've got a sudden question.
I was asking about your routine that you use like every morning to start your day.
Yeah. So basically what I was going on a long tangent to say was that you need to test your own ideal routine. So sure, I'll tell you mine, but it's not really that relevant unless you're similar to me. So I get up between 5:15 and 5:45 a.m. I do check my phone. You probably shouldn't, but I'll probably just check WhatsApp and a few messages. I pretty much just get in the car and go straight to Costa Coffee. I listen to an audiobook in the car, but if my mind is full, I'll just listen to music, because if your mind is full, there's no point putting anything else in it. So I'll have months of the year where I'll listen to like 100 audiobooks in 3 months. And then I'll have 2 months where I'm just listening to music because my head is so full with stuff I've got to do. So I'll go and get my medium skinny cappuccino extra shot from Costa Coffee. Then I'll come back here and I will be buzzing. and I'll do strategy and vision. I'll reply to my emails. I'll do my content in the morning. I'll prepare my lives and all the episodes I've got to do. I'll ping off all the tasks to all of my staff and my team who've got to crack on and do their stuff. So that's my key result area, strategy and vision time. I'll jump on Clubhouse. I'll do a Facebook Live. I'll go and get my second coffee at about 9:30, and then I'll do more content and more lives. I'll have meetings in the early to mid-afternoon. I'll go to the gym in the late afternoon. I'll come back. I'll have dinner and spend some time with the kids. And then occasionally I'll do these podcasts. I mean, I was doing one a day in the evenings, but it's not always good for me. You're actually getting a quite energized version of me. I think it's because I just did a Clubhouse Room podcast and live simultaneously. And because it was so overwhelming, I was just like, But often past 8 o'clock, I'm absolutely useless. I'm just a dribbling wreck. I go to bed early and I get up early. So I'm 9:30, I'm done. Watch a bit of Netflix and once a year, maybe have some sweet loving with the wife. There you go. That's my routine. Job done.
I don't know. Sounds like you need to be taking more care of your wife.
I'm just playing. It's also birthday and Christmas.
There you go. There you go. So you mentioned your strategy and vision. Do you work on that every single day?
Yep. I mean, look, my greatest purpose in life is to help as many people on this planet start and scale their business and get a better financial education. In my family and in my marriage, my job is to go build the empire. My wife's job is to go and look after the empire. That's agreed. They're roles that we both wanted. It's not in any way old school or traditional or sexist or anything. It's the deal we struck, and we both love our roles.
It worked for you. That's all that matters.
Exactly. And if it didn't, it wouldn't work, and that would be fine. We'd have to sort it out another way. Now, look, I have learned to help her more in her world. She doesn't really help me in mine because A, she sort of can't really, and B, she's not really into social media and all that stuff. But, you know, I do try and help a little bit around sort of, you know, when I say looking after the house, we've got a big freaking house and we've got two kids and, you know, she manages a lot of our personal money and stuff like that. She's like managing all of our cryptocurrencies and, you know, moving money from sort of different businesses and different accounts. And she's really involved in that. And I really like that. So what was the question again, Sandy?
Well, a strategy and vision, because a lot of entrepreneurs and successful business owners that I speak with, they tend to do like a quarterly, you know, SWOT analysis or whatever. And you're saying you do that every single day. And
I don't do like a strategy plan every day, but I work on strategy every day. So global partnerships, global reach, collaborations, joint ventures, figuring out our big problems that are going to get us to the next level. And sometimes I get drawn into tactical stuff like I'm trying to hire more ad-based staff in our team right now and helping my team with that. Media buyers, pay-per-click, but that will link to the grand vision, because if I can have more advertising staff in my company, so we could do more ads and I can spend the money I've got on growing our ads, then we can grow globally. So occasionally you have to get tactical and roll your sleeves up. That's just, you know, that's just life. But yeah, every day I work on key result areas. I have 5 key result areas, Sandy, and they are collaborations, joint ventures and partnerships, global growth, strategy, vision, and my personal brand. Those 5.
That's amazing.
Anything I'm not doing, anytime I'm not doing work on that, is taking me a bit further away. It's diverting the ship off a different direction. So, and I like to do that really early because, you know, 6 a.m., no one's annoying you. No one's up. The guy isn't cutting the trees down. The kids aren't running around. The dog isn't yapping away. People aren't on emails. People aren't on social. So those first 2 or 3 hours, they are the most important part of the day for me. But I work like that. Many night owls, they work really late at night. And the creative type people, you know, they work late. So that's why I wrote Routine Equals Results, so you can find your own flow in the day. Because I think we all have our highs and lows and ebbs and flows in the day.
Yep.
I think it's really important to batch your tasks according to that. Like sometimes I'm in a meeting at 3:30 and I'm thinking I'm absolutely knackered. And it's actually counterproductive to be in a meeting when you're knackered. So just moving that meeting another half hour early can make it a lot more productive. But it's really productive to do admin when you're knackered, because you're either like, I can't be bothered to do it, it's only admin, or you get it done real quick. So, yeah.
So when you were just starting out, very beginning, what was it the main things that kept you up at night?
Oh, growth. It's always growth for me. The things that keep me up at night are always growth. Sometimes the children, of course, but always growth. All my challenges of growth.
Yeah.
Now, occasionally we might have an issue, a legal issue or a reputational issue. I've had maybe two or three of those, which have, I mean, we've had plenty because when you're an eight-figure a year business, you have challenges and difficulties and scraps and legal and reputational. And in fact, I don't think we've ever had an employment tribunal in 15 years. It's a bit of a miracle because really, when you've been doing it this long, everything's happened.
Sure, of course. And when you're putting yourself out there like you are, there's going to be things that pop up.
Oh, 100%. I've got loads of haters, loads of them.
But don't they say that could be a good thing?
In fact, I've got enough haters. I need more haters. Come on, up your game. Well, look, don't try and get haters, but the amount of haters you've got is probably directly linked to the amount of fans you've got. No haters, no fans, because you're not putting yourself out there because some people like my accent, some people hate it. Some people like the way I dress, some people hate it. Some people like my random or sort of somewhat scattered energy style, some people hate it. So people will hate about you the very thing that's great about you. And the courage to be disliked and put yourself out in the world, regardless of what anyone will think of you, that is the greatest gift you can give to yourself and your community who are there waiting to buy all your stuff.
Love it. And it was interesting. I was talking to my son before this call, and he's going to be a disruptive entrepreneur at some point in his life. He is in college, but he's constantly calling me with, I've got this idea and this idea. So he wanted me to ask you. So this is for you, Brandon, because he's probably watching.
Hey, Brandon.
So he was like, how do you feel so confident when you're being disruptive? When you're, you know, how do you keep that confidence going when you're being disruptive and then you've got those haters that are coming in?
Okay, so I think it's probably not smart to be disruptive for disruptive sake. So, you know, if you're looking to challenge an industry that's lazy and monopolized and needs shaking up, that is a virtuous way of being disruptive. But, you know, shouty and ranty for the sake of it and just going off picking fights, that's a very different definition of disruptive. Because I think if you look in the dictionary, you'll find both of those definitions.
Exactly.
So make sure that the cause is noble and where you are disrupting is in line with your vision and values. And it is something that is meaningful to you and meaningful to others. Because when it is that, you will endure the pain and challenges along the way. So when someone is on vision and mission and purpose, they will endure the challenges along the way in the pursuit of their vision. They will accept the criticism and praise. They will accept the followers and fans, then the critics and haters. And they will let neither extremes of unbalance distract them from their vision. And people don't see that the upside is a distraction. But if you have a load of fans going, yeah, Rob, you're great. Wow, you're amazing. That could be quite a distraction. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. Well, thank you. Well, thank you. Oh, yes, I'm great. Oh, yes, I'm great. Wait a minute. I should be focused on my mission. So never let anything distract you from your vision and mission. And I think it was Churchill that said, if you stop and take a shot at every dog that barks, you'll never get to your destination. So have a clear vision and mission. Make sure that your disruption is noble and worthy. And then just believe in yourself that this is something that you're meant to do and have the courage to be disliked and accept the fact that in pursuit of what you do that's meaningful, you will be disliked. Thousands of years ago, when people believed things that were very extreme, they were often burned at the stake and ridiculed and exiled. Nowadays, society is a little bit more developed and that rarely happens. But I really would just say, you are worthy of everything that you pursue and you are no better or worse than anyone else. You're on a level. So just understand we all have different roles and functions. We all have a purpose in life. And I think our purpose is to find our purpose and just accept along your journey, you're going to have people that are going to criticize you because confidence, you would say, is to believe in yourself. But if anyone can do something, why can't you? And humanity have proven for thousands of years that we can perform what other people call miracles. You know, what we call miracles are things that human beings did. People who we call geniuses are things that human beings did, fellow human beings. So if this human being can do it, then this human being can do it. Because if anyone can do it, why can't you? So to be confident is to believe in humanity. And to believe in humanity is to believe in yourself. But I would say if anyone is asking about having the confidence, the greatest gift I can give them is to liberate them from worrying about what other people will think about them.
Thank you.
Now, there are 10,000 or 100,000 or a million people that need your podcast, Sandy, that need your son's work, that need my Disruptive Entrepreneur podcast, that need my mission. And there are millions of people who don't.
Right.
So we should focus on the million people that do and love them and create a product and service that's perfect for them and look after them and spend all of our time and energy on them and forget everybody else.
Right.
They just don't exist.
Yeah. I have this saying on my wall and it says, there are people less qualified than you doing the things that you want to do only because they decided to believe in themselves. And I keep that up there because, you know, I'm human. I have my days. I think we all do where it's just like, you know. But so have you, one of the things I talk about on the podcast and in my book is also called Happiness Solved. It's all about helping people get back to a place when their peace is disruptive. Has there ever been a time in your life where you felt that you were at your lowest low? And how did you get yourself back up out of it?
Yeah. So I'd probably say 2019. 2019 through 2020 was weird because it was, I made millions of pounds that year and I somehow didn't see a lot of it, even though I made a lot of it. And I had just so much pressure and I felt lonely at the top. And I felt like, there was a lot of reliance on me for a lot of stuff, but I didn't feel as supported, even though I probably was more than I thought, but I definitely wasn't enough. But that was on me. And I realized it was on me. I'm not one to sit in my own pity party for too long. But I realized that, you know, I've had coaches and mentors, but I need to get another one or a new one. And also, I've had coaches and mentors and done courses and masterminds, but I've never had a therapist. So I got a therapist and I just go to her once a week and go for an hour. And it was freaking brilliant. And I spent about 9 months just really talking out all my challenges and issues and going deep and not getting interrupted and not getting sidetracked and not having other people chucking their ulterior motives on me. It was really liberating. And I'd never really talked that much because people tend to, you know, I mean, look, you're interviewing me. So my job is to talk a lot. But people do tend to talk at me a lot. It's one of our family traits. My mum, people just talk to her all the time. And me too, people tend to talk to me a lot. Sometimes they're trying to prove themselves or they can feel slightly nervous around me or they just want to show what they know. And so I've spent a lot of my life not really being able to fully get out and express how I feel. And, you know, you can't say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm really lonely making millions with loads of staff and everyone around me. It's, you know, people will just be like, shut up, you're ungrateful. So-and-so, but that's how I felt. And the good thing about me and the bad thing about me, I could be an oversharer, definitely an oversharer, but also I'll express how I feel and I'll talk about it. But I got myself stuck because I'd happily talk about anything that I'm struggling with and sometimes a bit too much and a bit inappropriate or TMI, as they say, too much information there from Rob. But in my areas of what people perceive as greatness or genius or skill, I'd never ask for help because that's my bag. That's my game. That's my riff. That's my jam. I don't need no help. I've got it. I'm the disruptive entrepreneur, strategy, vision, marketing, boom. I don't need no help. But when those areas start to have cracks appear or things, you know, then one thing my therapist said to me is, look, Rob, there's the young Rob, there's the child Rob, there's this lovely, sweet, vulnerable Rob. And then there's this disruptive entrepreneur, Rob, and you have a lot of identity of who you are based on being this entrepreneur. Who are you when you're not an entrepreneur? Like just Rob. That's so scary for me, Sandy, to think about and talk about because a lot of my identity is and was around being an entrepreneur. But the problem with that is if all of your identity is around what you do, when you're struggling from time to time with what you do, which we all do, then that can start to make you struggle with who you are. So you have to be able to disassociate from thoughts and feelings and identity. I'm not the disruptive entrepreneur. I am not all of my accolades. I am not a public speaking world record holder. I'm not a Decca millionaire. I'm not a guy who's done 8 figures in property business. I'm not got a guy who's got 7 companies. I'm not an author of 18 books. They are the things that I've done. I am Rob, who's young, vulnerable, a little bit messed up, but very honest and open and quite chirpy and fun and a little bit juvenile And yeah, quite emotional and a bit all over the place. And I'm a human being who's worthy of love. And I've got my baggage. And that disassociation journey, because I get a lot of meaning and pride almost, not hubris pride, but feel good. Yeah, look, I've done a lot of things in business. I've helped millions of people. I reach millions of people. That feels good. But to take that away can be very empty. And I went through that journey in 2019, 2020. And came out the other side. Thanks to therapy.
Just in time for the pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. While the pandemic was going on, it's all, you know what? I know a lady who's amazing. She was really high up in hostage negotiation, one of the top in the world. And I had her on my podcast. I'm good friends with her. And she said, usually people struggle when three areas, main areas of their life are being disrupted. One, two, you can kind of handle, but three. So I had my own internal identity. I had the freaking pandemic lockdown as well. And then I had some personal issues. So it's like three major areas of your life. Make sure you get help because you'll handle one or two. Three, they can break you.
Yeah, absolutely. So one last question that I have for you is, what is the best advice that you could give your younger self when you were just starting out in your business?
Well, the answer I'm going to give we've covered. So I'll give it, but I'll give you something new. Don't worry about what people think about you. That was the big one. Because if I think about it honestly, Sandy, absolutely everything I didn't do was because I was scared about what someone would say or judge. Absolutely everything. I'd never approach girls in case. The funny thing is, when I was younger and single, I don't think I was scared of the rejection from the girl. I was scared of my mates ridiculing me. Isn't that mad? Yeah. So I was actually scared of my mates' ridicule more than being rejected by a girl.
Right.
And I only just realized that really, that the voices in my head were my mates laughing at me and about me.
Huh. Yeah.
So, you know, that we've all had the one or two that have got away, and I had plenty of those because I never went up and talked to them. So, you know, I didn't start my business because people would judge me. If I could go back to my 21-year-old self and say, you're good enough. Don't worry about what people think about you. Just spend a bit. I didn't spend any time figuring out what I wanted to do. I just floated.
Mm.
So the next piece of advice would be think daily about what you want to do with your life. Now, when you're 21, that was the age I just picked. You said your younger self. You don't have to be in a rush. But every day you should say, who am I and what do I want to do with my life? Who am I and what do I want to do with my life? And have the courage to try some stuff. Because I wouldn't try stuff in case anyone said, hey, you tried that, it didn't work, I told you. Hey, you tried. So I'd never had the courage to try anything. I would only do things if I would be great at it. We all know someone like that. I never do any of that. They only do things they're good at. Well, how'd you get good at anything?
Right.
And I was that guy. I only did things that I was already good at. Sorry, Sandy, go on.
I was just going to say, look at baseball players. You know, how many times do they have to strike out before they hit their home run? That's like the most overused analogy.
Yeah. So, you know, if anyone's single and lonely, if you just approach and talk to 10 or 20 or 30 people, one of them's going to be a good fit. If you're a bit worried about sales, just phoning up 10 or 20, you're going to close a sale. You do 50 DMs, you're going to get some interest. So I'm glad you raised that point. You know, it is a numbers game, as they say, but it's also a good test. Like I get rejected every day. Every day I get rejected. Mm. So bring it on. Because it's just part of life. So don't worry about what people think about you. Think about what you want to do with your life and have a little bit more courage and conviction to go and try things. Fail and experiment and test. They would be the three things I'd say to my younger self.
Nice. I love it. And a good friend of mine always used to tell me, what other people think of you is none of your business.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? People forget. Like you think people are thinking about you. They're thinking about you for a minute. Oh, look what Rob did over there. Oh, what next? Oh, what, where am I? And they've gone. They're not thinking about you anywhere near the amount that you think they are. And
that's so true.
A lot of people do say that as they get older, they care less. Because I think as you get older, you start to lose the things you value with age. And so you realize that spending all the time worrying about other people is just you're thinking and wishing your life away. and you cherish, you know, how really older people cherish children, mm-hmm. because children have what they don't have much of left, which is time. And that's the most important thing. So focus on the most important things.
Yeah.
Grant Cardone's a friend of mine, and he said, look, you know, if people are bitching and moaning, complaining, they ain't busy enough doing meaningful stuff. So stay busy doing meaningful stuff. You don't have time for bitching, moaning, complaining, and distracting and worrying about what other people think about you. If you're worrying about what other people think about you, you ain't busy enough.
I love it. That's awesome. That's great. Well, I usually, when I'm doing one of my podcasts, I usually just say to my guests, hey, so what else? Is there anything else that you want to throw out to people?
Well, I always finish every single episode I ever do on my own podcast and all of my content with a little saying, which I've said thousands of times. And I think it really sums up being a disruptive entrepreneur. And I think it sums up life. And it is this: if you don't risk anything, you risk everything.
Yeah. I've heard you say that many times. That's awesome, Rob. Well, thank you so much. Rob Moore, the disruptive entrepreneur. This was such an honor to talk with you today. And you gave so much incredible information that's going to help so many people. I love that. You're awesome.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you, Rob. Take care.
See you later.
Okay, bye. Well, that was by far one of the most fun, entertaining interviews I have ever done. And he is a hoot by all means. So thank you for joining everyone today. If you'd like to learn more about me and my book, Happiness Solved, Climbing 100 Steps, you can go to sandyscarlotta.com. You can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Coach Sandy Scarlotta. And as always, I hope that you and your family are healthy and safe, and that your life is filled with so much peace, joy, and happiness. Take care, everyone.